think we're up and running here. A little rocky the day after the 4th of July, but I think we're connected to Japan. This is going to be interesting. An awful lot of emails have been coming in about the story by Dr. Henry Mako, Ph.D., called Chinese Secret Society Challenges Illuminati. This is a very interesting story, something the likes of which I have not seen in all the years of doing this program or website. The author is Benjamin Fulford of the, well, the author quoted in the story. He's an American, North American, Canadian to be specific, expatriate living in Japan now. And let's just bring him on and say hello and see how he's doing and check this connection out. Are you there, Ben?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. We got a little bit of
a
delay.
It's a cell phone, so the reception's not so good. But.
Well, you sound all right. It's
okay.
There's a bit of a delay, so we'll have to deal with that. A lot of people have been asking me, you know, could this be real? Is this a hoax? Is it a joke? What is it? We're going to find out much more about this story, so stay with us tonight as we continue our conversation with Benjamin Fulford. He is the former Asian Pacific Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine. And he quit in disgust when Forbes refused to run a damaging story about one of its advertisers. And boy, I know that game, and many of us in the media do, who try to tell as close to the truth as we can without losing our jobs. In this case, Ben did eventually lose his job because Forbes wouldn't back him. It's a story I've heard before. Speaks of a very principled man, a reporter, a journalist, in the best tradition. And let's find out from Ben exactly what happened. First of all, Ben, when were you named Asian Bureau Chief for Forbes? And what was your background before that, if you would?
Okay. I've been a journalist in Japan for about 20 years, and I was Bureau Chief for Forbes from 1998 to 2004, beginning 2005.
That's a good long stretch,
that,
yeah.
All sorts of different publications.
Okay. Your relationship with Forbes up until the time when you decided you had to part ways with them was how? You were there for almost 8 years, I guess.
Well, no, it started out as a really cushy job, you know, and they let me investigate a lot of stuff about Japanese organized crime and the seamier side of things in Japan. However, at a certain point, I seemed to be getting too close to something they didn't want me to get to, and they started stopping stories. There was a corruption story about GE that didn't make it, another one about Citibank that didn't make it. And then when I finally found out it was an antivirus software company was actually making viruses, that was it.
Huh.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that was the last straw for me.
They do that, I've heard, and why not? It's like some cases, once in a while you hear about firemen actually starting fires. I don't know. It's bizarre, but that's what software companies that are in the antivirus protection business are accused of doing from time to time, if not directly, indirectly, and it wouldn't surprise me. When did you learn to speak Japanese?
Well, I went to university in Japan. So I came here when I was 19, and I've been here more than 20 years, so I guess I learned early on.
Did it come easy to you?
Well, it's a very difficult language, not grammatically, but because you have to grasp a whole new way of thinking. You have to understand that Asian culture and Western culture parted ways about 40,000 years ago. So that means there's 40,000 years of folk wisdom you have to catch up with to really understand what's going on, and that's very, very difficult.
You mean 4,000 instead of 40,000? There was nobody around back then, supposedly, but...
Well, what I mean is the genetic tests show that's when we separated our, you know, the Orientals and the Caucasians.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, with respect to the Asian mind, Western minds, meaning the American mind in particular, we'll just keep it to North America here, America, Canada...
Mm.
Are not basically understood. And I predicate that statement on not having been there, not having any experience, but having talked to the former Time Bureau Chief for Beijing on the program some years ago. He said, when I asked him what the Chinese, what the Asian mind thought about American Western diplomacy in China specifically, he laughed. And he said they consider Americans to be but children in a sandbox. That's the gulf we're talking about here. Now, would that remark ring fairly true to you in any way?
Well, yes, in part, but I think another way they look at it is they look at Western society as a slave society.
A what? A slave society?
A slave society.
Well, indeed it is. Go ahead.
Yes, controlled in secret by a group of, very sophisticated slave drivers.
Well, we call them Illuminati. We call them Bilderbergers, CFR, Trilateral Commission. We can throw in Skull and Bones, the Club of Rome, the Fabian Society, all kinds of secret cartels, cabals, and groups. But at the top, it's a fairly singular power source, and it is certainly one of slave owner to slaves. And certainly the encumbering of the slaves is becoming ever more adroit with each passing month, it seems, with technology and politics changing so quickly over here. The view from Japan of North America, let's talk about the United States. How is it for you, an expatriate from Canada?
What, living in Japan, you mean?
Yeah, what's it look like over there? What we're doing over here, and I mean, with President Bush, Vice President Cheney, of course, enjoying the lowest ratings probably in presidential and vice presidential history. The American polls show the respect for the U.S. Congress of virtually around 14-15% in terms of job satisfaction. So tell me more.
Yeah, no, it looks like maybe Russia did just before the Iron Curtain fell. It looks like a huge sea change is about to happen. Like, the biggest thing since the Declaration of Independence, I think.
Well, almost the antithesis of that, and I can see how that would be a view from over there, and it's probably far more loaded with merit than we'd all like to agree. Things are happening over here, as I think you well know, at a very rapid pace now, and the controllers are literally pushing things in the American public's face that are so unconstitutional and illegal as to be laughable if they weren't so tragic.
Yeah, I think these people are scared, and they're trying to carry out a plan. They're desperate now, but their plan is so horrendous and so bizarre, it's just that it provoked a split even within their ranks.
I've heard talk of factions. You mentioned the word, they are desperate, keyword being desperate. There are others who have said the same kind of thing, that they sense there is a window through which they must move now if they're ever going to move. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yes. What happened? Let me tell you something. I was offered the job of finance minister of Japan by the Freemasons.
When?
Okay?
When?
I got to David Rockefeller. I actually was able to link him to some murders of bankers and other people in Japan as a part of his effort to take over the Japanese financial system. And when I confronted the former Japanese finance minister, Heizo Takanaka, with this, he sent a ninja, believe it or not, a real-life ninja, who offered me a gold Freemason badge and told me I could either accept a job of great power or be killed. At first, I thought I had no choice. I had to go along, which is what happens to a lot of people when they get pulled into this. But then, the Chinese Secret Society showed up and offered me protection. And that's why I can talk about this. And I want to tell you, because I got right inside, right at the very top. Now, anybody up to a 33-degree Freemason is a chump. They think they're doing good for humankind and they're doing God's work. There are 13 degrees above the 33rd degree.
So I've heard.
And the first thing they learn is that there is no God. We are God. This is what they're taught.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, believe it or not, they're the descendants of Babylonian tyrants. This goes back almost 6,000 years. It's ancient Babylonian slave-driving technology. They use a combination of bribes, murder, ostracism, mind control, whatever. They have a huge arsenal. They think very, very long-term.
Mm-hmm.
And the story I figured out now is that when they started with the Zionism, they had this plan to actually make a capital in Jerusalem. a lot of the religious Jews thought of this as blasphemy. But they actually did it. And then there was a convergence, and there was a faction, really radical faction, that had this plan to eliminate Christianity. And this is going to sound so horrendous, and I have trouble believing it.
Hold on right there, Ben. Ben, hold on. Let me ask you to pause. We'll come back. We have to take a break. We'll come back and pick up that thought and find out about that. Eliminating Christianity? Very interesting. Lots already on the table here. My guest is Benjamin Fulford, the former Asian Pacific Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine, who has a stunningly provocative piece up on the site written by Dr. Henry Macko, PhD, who interviewed Ben at great length. You'll see it up there in featured stories on the left-hand side of my homepage, so by all means take a look. Another story under that written by Ben Fulford, The Secret History of the Freemasons in Japan as well. Be back in a minute. Okay, back with Benjamin Fulford live from Tokyo. He, by the way, has published 15 books written in Japanese with cumulative sales running at over 500,000 copies. He's got his own weekly two-hour television program over there, appears frequently on numerous other nationally broadcast programs in Japan, and has regular columns in a variety of best-selling Japanese magazines. My guest, Benjamin Fulford, lucky to connect with him at Showtime. We couldn't get through to his landline, which I had a hunch might be the case. These controversial subjects, one never knows who might be playing phone games. But we have him on the line right now. Go ahead and tell us then what this story about abolishing Christianity is about. Is that about the new one world, new world order religion?
Yes. Well, you know, what I first got wind of was a plan to kill Asians, reduce the population of Asia. They told me once I was invited in that they had a plan to reduce the population of Asia.
Ken, when you say, when you say they invited you in, who was they and okay. What were you in?
What happened was, I interviewed the Heizo Takanaka, the former Japanese finance minister.
Mm-hmm. What year was this approximately?
This year, in fact.
Okay.
I hit a tender spot. And, you know, I confronted him with having sold the Japanese financial system over to the Rockefellers. And then he sent the ninja who offered me this, you know, to join the Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered me the job of finance minister.
If I might interject here, please explain what it is. Most Americans, the most listening in Canada right now, or wherever they're listening around the world, won't understand why or how the Rockefellers are so heavily entrenched and powerful in Japan, when in point of fact, the Rockefellers, I guess, own much of Japan and have since World War II. So tell us a little bit about that background, if you would.
Okay. Now, the Rockefellers, you have to understand their real influence. It's sort of like everybody outside of America seems to know how powerful they are, but they try to hide this fact from their own people.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to go back to the very first Rockefeller. I had to go back to 1918 editions of Forbes magazine to figure this out. But
to John Rockefeller?
He was worth about $250 billion in today's money.
Mm-hmm.
And the 10 richest people controlled about 70% of the money supply. This was just before they took over the financial system instead. And what they've done is they've hidden it all through a series of charitable foundations. There's over 300 foundations.
Mm-hmm.
And they use this to finance universities, to finance research. And so they control through money, and they hide it through these foundations. So if you do a check, it seems that David Rockefeller is only worth $3 billion or so, but that's because the rest of it's hidden in these charitable foundations.
Okay, name a few of them. Just give us a few.
Well, it's the Rockefeller Foundation, for one.
Oh, sure.
There's a whole bunch. I mean, just look under Google with Rockefeller and Foundation, and
okay.
You'll see so many.
All right.
So they're always considered the secret rulers of the United States and much of the world. So they are like the hidden patriarchs of this secret government.
Okay, how do the Rockefellers on the planet stand up to the Rothschilds?
Well, there is an alliance and a split as well. The Rothschilds originally set the Rockefellers up to help them monopolize oil and what happened, though, is the Rockefellers got very strong, and they became the more dominant partners in the whole enterprise. But Europe is still basically controlled by the Rothschilds. The head of the Rothschild side of the clan is Philip Rothschild in London.
Mm-hmm.
And there is another group that controls France, Belgium, and Holland, which is the Grand Lodge of the Orient in France. There's another branch of the Rothschilds. There was a German branch of the Rothschilds. They've kind of gone laid low since Hitler was purged. But you have to think of it like royalty. Royal families interbred with old financial families.
Mm-hmm.
And they interbreed with each other, and they keep control that way. And the Freemasons are one of the secret societies they use to control European society and North American society.
Who uses the Freemasons, the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers? Or
they both do.
Okay.
They both do. And they also control Mossad and the CIA, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people in the CIA think they're working for the United States of America, and they do not think they're working for robber barons. But the reality is they are working for robber barons. So that's how the people look at the United States. They look at it as an enclave controlled by the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers.
Okay, and how did that extend to Japan? By virtue of the victory in World War II?
Yes. And so, it ceased being a Rothschild sphere of influence and became a Rockefeller sphere of influence. But you understand, the Japanese were pretty independent before World War II, but
mm-hmm.
they had close relations with the Rothschilds who originally financed their modernization.
And they also pushed the Japanese to engage in the Russo-Japanese War, did they not?
Yes, absolutely. They armed them for it, and they helped them, and it was a very successful venture.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese have a deep gratitude as a result.
Hmm.
And to this day, they have very friendly feelings.
Okay, very good. All right, let's pause on that, then we'll come back and find out about the eradication of Christianity on the planet and the Masonic influence being, of course, I guess, employed at the behest of the Rockefellers and or the Rothschilds. So we'll explore that. My guest is Benjamin Fulford, who has a dynamite article up there, courtesy of the superb, I call him brilliant, writer Henry Macko, Ph.D., who did a lot of research on this and interviewed Ben at great length and posted the article, and we were very honored to have it. You'll see it up there in Featured Stories, Chinese Secret Society Challenges Illuminati. Be right back with Ben Fulford in just a minute. Okay, back with Benjamin Fulford. Read the article by Dr. Henry Macko, Ph.D., Chinese Secret Society Challenges Illuminati. And then read the article by Ben Fulford right under that in the featured story box at Rents.com. Click on Ben's name, go to his own website in English. It's a Japanese site, of course, but he's got one for all of us folks as well. Okay, the plan to eliminate Christianity. Now, you mentioned how the Rothschilds and the Zionists set up their Jerusalem and their Middle East.
Right, so what they did was they tried to make the Bible prophecy come true.
How so?
Without the intervention of God. In other words, they did it. It wasn't any sort of divine intervention.
Okay.
So they are God.
All right.
They consider themselves to be as powerful as God. There is no God. They are the equivalent on earth.
So they're atheists.
They are the descendants of Babylonian tyrants.
Gotcha. All right.
And so one thing I've been hearing, and this is what disturbed me when I was invited to join, is that they really did plan to reduce the world population by several billion people.
Well, this goes back to Global 2000, but one more word about this severely atheistic organization, which is using organized religion to hide behind, as they always have. It's not a big surprise. And, of course, that leads to all kinds of difficulties, shall we say. But it's an interesting thing to know. Okay. Now, you were invited to join the organization.
Mm-hmm.
A Rockefeller ninja was sent to make you an offer you couldn't refuse.
Right.
But you decided not to accept.
Yes.
And how did you decide not to accept? And let's just hear. We have plenty of time, so
okay.
you get the offer, and what happened?
Well, the next day I get contacted by a gentleman who says he represents a Chinese secret society.
The very next day?
The very next day.
And how did that person know to contact you the very next day? How did you determine later on that he or she might have known that?
Well, I don't know. They keep their secrets quite well. I assume they have a mole very high up in the organization. Because what you have to understand is that the Chinese secret society also has deep roots in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I should give you a brief history of these people. And I recognize them from the history books. So when they approached me, I already had some knowledge about them.
I ask another question? How did they approach you? Did they call you and say, Ben, we'd like to talk to you? Or did they just come knocking at your door? What happened?
I got a phone call from a gentleman who said he'd like to meet me and talk about something important.
Was he speaking English or Japanese?
Japanese.
Okay. All right, so let's go back and do a little history on this organization now.
Okay. Now, the Ming Dynasty was like the high point in Chinese history. This is when their civilization reached a peak. And they were invaded by some very uncouth barbarians known as the Manchus. And when this happened, the Ming army, they were betrayed by a border general. They became an underground organization, a secret society.
The Ming
army,
okay.
So there's two branches. There's the old Ming army and the old Ming navy. And these are their descendants. And what happened was they tried to, you know, they wanted to overthrow the Qing and restore the Ming. And their first big attempt was what we know as the Boxer Rebellion. And then later, they got huge help from the Japanese royal family, from the Meiji.
M-E-I-J-I, correct?
Yeah, so this is the people who modernized Japan. So we're talking about, you know, at the beginning of the 1900s.
Okay, so the Meiji family modernized Japan, beginning of the 1900s.
It was a sect of a bunch of Freemasons set up by the Rothschilds.
That's how the Rothschilds first got involved with Japan. Okay,
right.
And China. I understand.
Yes, but the unknown to the Rothschilds, or maybe they knew at the time. I don't know, but the Japanese helped the Chinese secret society overthrow the Ming Dynasty. They also got help from Chinatowns all over the world, where they have their bases.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how Sun Yat-sen overthrew the last emperor.
Okay. So you're saying, in a way, Sun Yat-sen was a tool of the Masons, who were a tool of the Rothschilds.
Well, except that, that in appearances is like that. But you see, the Asians don't particularly want to be ruled by white people, so it doesn't really work. In fact, on the ground.
All right.
They don't really, they take their money, but they're not going to, do what everything they're told to do.
But that was a political mechanism in so many words. That's how Sun Yat-sen assumed power. Okay.
And he was later ousted. And there was a lot of, as you know, the Japanese invaded China, and they were trying to take it over, and there was this huge battle over the future of the planet, which evolved into World War II. But, they were fighting in China, a proxy war, for over a decade before World War II started.
Very few Americans understand that.
What I'm saying is that the secret society and ended up fighting the communist Chinese and being defeated and going underground.
So they were part of Chiang Kai-shek's apparatus.
Well, they were
supporting
allies,
him,
as I said, but
allies.
They were not part of his apparatus.
Okay, they were fighting with him, supporting him, and he lost. Okay. And Mao Zedong was
financed by the Soviet Union, by the Rothschilds on that side of the equation.
All right.
And then they kicked out the connection in the 1960s, and China became independent from Rothschild or Freemason control.
Was that a big shock to the Rothschilds at the time, or do they see it coming?
No, it was a big shock. I mean, there's all this talk about who lost China, this was a major blow for them. But they never really controlled China. Like I say, the Chinese were onto them and onto their game, and they weren't going to be fooled.
How did the British East India Company and the Opium Wars and all of that play into this in the 18th and 19th centuries?
Well, I mean, the story there was that the British, when everybody else was buying lots of tea, and they had nothing to pay for it with, and so they invaded China and forced them to buy opium. as you know, so that they could have their tea. So that was a war of invasion, but they couldn't control China. You know, it was just too big for them to manage. So they instead just threatened them to, you know, and kept them as a sort of vassal state in that sense.
Well, they had enough trouble with the United States before, and of course it was known as the colonies, but yes, so trying to control China, I can see, would be virtually a pipe dream.
It's worth noting that Skull and Bones were, as you know, opium and slave traders, so they were deeply involved in all this.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Zionists were in the slave trade business, too, a tremendous Zionist Jewish participation in that filthy business.
Sure, well, there's still slave trading going on to this day, as we know.
Well, that's called, white slavery, and I don't know how many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of women and children are sold into slavery through various conduits that often run through Israel every year.
Sure.
All right. Stand by, Benjamin, if you would. We'll come right back. Conversation with Benjamin Fulford. And do visit his website and do visit rents.com. Look for his article about the Freemasons and their history as well. It's in the fifth featured story down, the secret history of the Freemasons in Japan. Be right back. Okay, and back with Benjamin Fulford. We're going to pursue the issue of Christianity and its future, or lack thereof, in a few minutes, but we're doing a little background now on the Chinese secret society, which actually came to the rescue, as it were. Ben would either be filthy rich now or dead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it is, I think, just to divert a bit, but it is a sort of what's known in folklore as making a deal with the devil, right?
Mm-hmm.
They offer you, like, I would have been finance minister and I would have made billions of dollars looting the Japanese to finance genocide.
Right.
But anyway, on the...
Which goes back to our earlier comment about reducing the world population, which we're going to get to, so stay, we have a lot of time tonight. And that, of course, goes back to the actual printed projection of reducing the world population called Global 2000 by 75 or 80%. But we'll get back to that in a few minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, well, when I met the Chinese, you know, at first I didn't know what to make of it.
Was your meeting with them, Ben? Did they come to your place and sit down and talk to you?
No. In a hotel room.
Was it one person or two?
Two people.
Male, female?
Male.
Dressed?
Dressed in pretty ordinary, not very expensive-looking clothing.
Okay, and they sat you down. Now, you had never heard of this secret society before, correct?
Oh, I had. I mean,
not in terms of it being active to the extent that it might pop up in your life. You'd heard about it in the past.
No, I'd studied Chinese history. So the last I'd heard about them or read about them in the history books was the Green and the Red Gangs that fought the communists in Shanghai in 1949.
That's my point. All right, go ahead, please.
So for me, it was like a ghost from the history books appearing in front of me.
Gotcha.
And they told me that they had a membership worldwide of 6 million, including 1.8 million gangsters, all the Asian gangsters in the world, and 100,000 professional assassins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't sure whether or not to believe these people, but I later flew to Taiwan, and I met the heads, and you know, they were surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of men in black suits who look like gangsters. I mean, and I was given some martial arts displays, so I believe they're not lying when they say they have 6 million members and a lot of them are gangsters.
Now, are they headquartered in Taiwan or did they just pick that as a meeting place for you?
No, they are headquartered in Taiwan.
Huh.
But it's a very secret organization. I mean, they don't really have a building. You can say this is their headquarters.
Okay, well, they've been there since Chiang Kai-shek fled there in 1949, I guess, and before
But they've infiltrated the Chinese government right up to the Politburo level.
Hmm.
And they're all over China, and they're all over the world.
Okay.
And they also have, you know, the Japanese Yakuza gangs are also part of this, many of them.
The Yakuza?
Yes, Yakuza gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 150,000 of them throughout Japan.
All right. And let's talk just for a moment about their projection of power in the United States. There are a lot of Asians now. There are some Asian gangs. Certainly there are Chinatowns around the U.S. In every big city there's a Chinese community. And are they projecting power through those various locations?
Absolutely. They're everywhere. And the other thing is that you got to remember that the two-thirds of the membership are scholars, not gangsters. And these will be people working as researchers, for example, in
scientists.
Laboratories or as university professors.
Now, we know, Ben, there are lots of Chinese over here in the United States at the university level, certainly doing contract work for various very important corporations. By the tens of thousands, they're over here. Now, Is this People's Liberation Army, or is this secret society, or is this both?
Okay, you got to make sure one thing. These people are anti-communist, okay? You got to get that clear. They're not part of the People's Republic of China.
All right. So the PLA has spies all over the place here, but the secret society is not part of that. They are completely opposed to it.
Yeah, they're a totally separate organization.
All right.
But they do have membership, of course, in the Chinese secret police, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird mix. You got to remember, they're... I mean, if they do have one loyalty, it's to, you know, the rules, as I was told, were, you know, to protect the weak, to fight against injustice, to help each other. You know, nothing that I would find morally objectionable in what they told me were their code.
Sounds
it's really like a book of morals, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like good old-fashioned values, and yeah, that would work here. So when you had this meeting in Taiwan, Where did that take place, and what was the meeting like, and who were the people you met with? I don't expect you to name them or show us pictures on the internet, but you know, what did these people say?
Well, I mean, it was meeting in a small Chinese restaurant, you know, upstairs in a small nondescript room.
Gee, sounds like a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, I mean, and these guys, they looked like something out of a Hollywood movie. There were some of them were missing like four fingers, you know, and. One guy I met, he said he'd personally killed 100 people. I mean, they're pretty scary, funky people, let me tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
That some of them. Some of them were had two PhDs and were very sophisticated and charming, you know?
Okay, and the core group you met with were numbered how many?
Well, there was a dozen. And then the real core... Well, I don't know how much I should be able to disclose, but, you know, I mean...
Well, you don't have to go any further than you don't want to.
And so, you know, they explained to me, I mean, they understood the urgency that there was a genocide plan and that they were manufacturing diseases.
All right, when I said you don't have to go any further than you don't want to, I meant you don't have to go any further than you want to, of course.
Right.
I misspoke there, but the gist of this, the crux of this thing, was their concern of an ethnic-specific bioweapon, perhaps, or something along those lines that would eradicate much of the Asian population base.
Yes. And SARS was artificially manufactured.
SARS, of course, first popped up in Guangdong province in China, I believe, where the Chinese maintain, I think the People's Liberation Army has one or two bioweapons labs in Guangdong. Guangdong also is where H5N1 seemingly originated. That's one of the most lethal strains of it in the avian, the bird community now worldwide. So, yeah, interesting. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so they don't like the idea of a plan to wipe out, you know, well, what the Japanese Freemason told me, the one connected to Rockefeller, was that the plan was to reduce Asia's population to 500 million. And Japan was ordered to reduce their population to 75 million.
Ordered by?
Well, by the Rockefellers and the Freemasons and these...
The Illuminati.
Interbred Illuminati, yeah. And, it, you know, they tried to do it possibly, you know, through birth control is ideal, but if not, through disease or war or whatever is necessary.
Okay, now you mentioned SARS. SARS broke out. Now, interestingly enough, I'm going to make a point here, and I think it's very germane. You're an ex-Canadian. Now, SARS took a big toll of people in Canada. Healthcare workers in hospitals specifically. In one hospital, I know they lost a lot of people. At one point in the SARS, I won't call it an epidemic, but the SARS outbreak here, they printed in a Canadian paper, a major Canadian newspaper, pictures of all the fatalities of SARS in Canada. And there was about 100, or between 50 and 100, Ben. Mm-hmm. And I looked at those pictures, and I said to myself, uh-oh, SARS comes from China. And I look at these pictures, and all but two or three or four of the people, and let's just say they were 50, were Asians. They were all Asians.
SARS affects people with only a certain genotype, and most of these people are Asian.
That ties into the picture I saw.
For New American Century, page 60, you know, rebuilding America's defenses. They're saying bioweapons that can target specific genotypes would be a useful political tool.
Well, they've had that capability for 20, 25 years at least. They can target blue eyes, green eyes, blonde hair, brown hair, height, weight. Certainly anything to do with race or genetics can be programmed into bioweapons. That's not a surprise. And the SARS thing, so that was, in your opinion, what then? Something introduced by the West to let the Chinese know that they've got
to
get...
It was an attempt to cull the Chinese population.
So that was a full-blown attempt to massively infect China with some kind of a pandemic that would wipe out a great deal of the people there. That wasn't just an experiment or a calling card or a wake-up call.
I believe it was a sincere attempt to kill them.
Okay.
And, of course, people don't like being killed, which is why the society reactivated itself after being dormant for so many years. It's like an emergency fire brigade. Normally, people just go about their lives and do their jobs. They don't do anything illegal. But if there's a crisis, they all band together. And an interesting thing, a little sort of digression. When Sun Yat-sen took over, he found the imperial treasure, the hoard of treasure, you know, built up by the Chinese emperors over the millennia.
Mm-hmm.
And when the communists took over, some of this treasure was shipped off to the National Palace Museum in Taiwan, but some of it was hidden in a mountain in China. The communists tortured 3,000 people to try to find out where it was, but nobody spoke. And this is their emergency war chest, which they will, you know, dig up and spend if they feel...
You mean the secret society?
Yes.
Okay, so the Chinese communists could not find half of the treasure. Half went to Taiwan, half remained in on the mainland. And this is the secret society's, it's their bankroll.
Yes, it's their emergency fund for rainy day.
It must be a pretty handsome fund for rainy days.
Okay. Yes, billions of dollars.
Yeah, I would think. Stand by if you would, Ben. We have to take a break here coming up momentarily, and we'll come right back and continue our wide-ranging conversation, although it's quite focused, really, when you look at the totality of it. But again, SARS now, according to Ben Fulford and his Chinese-Asian contacts, was an attack, he believes, a full-blown attack to unleash a biospecific agent in China, a virus, to wipe out most Chinese. That might account for some of the exclamations of the Chinese general staff. The second in command of the military has said twice now that China is preparing to wage and to win a nuclear war with the United States. Now, maybe he was talking about the Rockefeller interest in the United States. I don't know. But this interesting conversation, to put it mildly, Ben Fulford is my guest, and we'll be right back with hour number two of our conversation in a few minutes. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Benjamin Fulford, the former Asia-Pacific Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine for 8 years. He's got quite a CV. You can see it on his website by clicking on his name at rents.com. We're talking about the Chinese, the Asian Chinese secret society, which has tentacles all over the world, how it is more than concerned about the plans, and apparently one failed attempt, to massively reduce the Chinese population en route to an overall world population reduction of some 80%. At least that's our understanding of the plans of a faction of the world elite, the Illuminati, the controllers, and so forth. Very interesting conversation so far. Again, the featured story section of Rents.com, Dr. Henry Macko's article, Chinese Secret Society Challenges Illuminati, all about Ben Fulford, and Ben's article, underneath it, the secret history of the Freemasons in Japan, is a very interesting history lesson in and of itself. Okay, Ben, you had your meeting in Taiwan. You met upstairs in a rather plain, nondescript room in a Chinese restaurant. And you met with these guys, and they're well-dressed guys at this point, you say?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of them were, like, obviously billionaires, and some of them were senior government figures. And
how could
them...
How could you think they were obviously billionaires, Ben? What was it about them that made you feel
that
way?
Well, the list of companies that they owned...
Did they present their own CV to you to prove their pedigree?
Well, some of them, I mean, you can see their faces in the newspaper all the time.
Oh, I see.
You know, so
okay.
You kind of...
yeah, with your knowledge, you knew who some of them were. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And again, some of them, Ben Fulford would never have guessed. I mean, these are professional people, they're not bums and so forth, but here they are saying, Ben, we trust you not to talk about this too much, and what we're trying to do is, and what did they say they were trying to accomplish?
Well, I mean, they want to stop these people, obviously.
Who are these people? The Rockefeller, Rothschild, Freemason,
the
Illuminati?
The Rockefellers, the Illuminati families.
Would you call them anti-Asian Westerners? Or what would you call them?
Well, they're racist, but they're more than that. They want to enslave humanity.
Okay, and the fewer the number left around, the easier it is to enslave them. So they want a skeleton crew, so to speak, no pun intended, left in China to kind of run things.
Yeah, well, they like the Chinese. They want to keep some Chinese around because they make good stuff, cheap,
well,
you know?
Yeah, just like they want to keep some Africans around in sub-Saharan Africa to work the plantation.
Right, that sort of thinking.
Right.
And so, but they need that. Their plan, as I was told by the Japanese Illuminati, was to weaken China through disease and also starvation. They're trying to, you know, engineer a global food shortage by creating viruses that affect our major food crops. And then they were going to provoke a war by getting Taiwan to declare independence. And their hope by that time was to have the Japanese army as a sort of subdivision of the U.S. Army ready to pounce on China and then divide it into six countries. This was the plan told me by a very senior Japanese people.
When was this plan kooky plan, but when was it cooked up?
Quite a long time ago. These people think in decades, sometimes hundreds.
Yeah, well,
years
the Japanese army is not able to go in and subjugate China. This is
no, you don't understand. The Japanese army is one of the biggest armies in the world. It's huge, and it would be working with the U.S. army and the NATO armies. You know,
how big is the Japanese army? How many standing men in uniform?
Well, it's an instant ramen army. Okay, what they have is they have lots and lots of officers and lots of weapons. They have the third biggest military budget in the world. And what they can do at any time is they can grab 3 million office workers off the street and turn them into soldiers.
Wow.
So it's actually quite huge.
All right.
And very up to date.
So this plan of subjugating China with this army and other factors like what's left of our army and military might is a plan that is still cohesive, apparently.
Well, not really. You see, the Japanese are still going according to the original plan, but that kind of blew up in Iraq now, didn't it?
It sure did.
The original plan was to grab all the oil in the Middle East and then go and get China, right? But they couldn't quite get their Middle Eastern part over. That's why. And another important thing to understand is that because the Rothschild faction split with the Rockefellers, that's where you had this freedom fry business and all this anti-French stuff, right? Is that they're not getting enough financing to maintain a big army there. That's why they had to use 150,000 troops. The only money they're getting is now from Japan. The Europeans are refusing to finance this adventure in Iraq anymore. So there's been a very major schism here between the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. And that's part of the reason why they cannot afford to, you know, really run the Iraq thing properly.
Okay, so now the secret society pointed to SARS as an attempt. And that's what galvanize them, and I guess we come to the next obvious question. Why Ben Fulford?
Well, because I wrote about this in a book in Japanese, which they alerted them, and then they did their own research and confirmed that it was indeed true.
Wrote about the population reduction plans?
Yeah, and SARS and stuff, and how it only affected mainly Asians, and also An interesting little misquote can be found in the Congressional Record for July 13, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
You have a bioweapons expert saying that the weaponization of bird flu is taking place across Asia. It's in the Congressional Record. If they try to erase it, I've got multiple copies stashed here and there. So.
Well, we do know that on April Fool's Day, April 1st of 2005, the resident of the White House, George Bush, signed an executive order which gave the federal government, i.e. George Bush and anybody he designates, full power of quarantine over any and all Americans, towns, cities, counties, states, which have been exposed to H5N1, avian influenza, or any other exotic infectious microorganism. They're not taking any chances. So somebody knows something somewhere, and we've been tracking this, you don't know this, on my program for almost 3 years now with Dr. Henry L. Nyman, Ph.D., who is a brilliant microbiologist and viral geneticist, and he has been following this genetically from the beginning and forecasting what it would do and how it is learning more and more all about how to survive and thrive in mammals, which it is very close to doing now. It's changing all the time and getting closer and closer to true pandemic status. Now, if there is an Asian genetic factor to this, I'm not aware of it, but we do know that Indonesia is rampant with H5N1, and Vietnam and Cambodia and Taiwan have had a lot of trouble with it. So that's a fact. And there
it's also a fact that the Asians are no longer sharing the bird flu data with the Americans because they're saying, why should we give you stuff that will allow you to create a vaccine
to protect yourself,
your own people, and, while we die.
Right. Now, that makes sense. We wondered why the genomes were being withheld, why the samples were being withheld. Now, that makes sense.
The Chinese haven't been giving them for years now. They've said, how about that? You know, we're not going to help you protect your own people while you try to kill us.
Okay. Now, back to the meeting in Taiwan.
So they decided that these people need to be overthrown.
The Rothschilds, the Illuminati, the Rockefellers.
Yes, the Illuminati.
Okay.
And specifically, if I have to, I will align myself with the Rothschilds against the Rockefellers if it comes to it. I'd rather get them both out of power, but, you know, the Rothschilds are a much mellower bunch at this point.
All right.
You know, they're the global warming thing, and you know, that's it's stupid, but at least
Well, I wouldn't
not,
call... So. I know I agree with you, but I would suggest that what they're doing in Europe with Bush's so-called defensive missiles, threatening and pushing and provoking Russia, is not particularly sanguine. It's pretty damn dangerous. But the Russians today announced they're going to deploy their new Iskander. It's an intermediate-range cruise missile in western Russia to oppose the Bush so-called defensive missiles, which, of course, are being placed there or will be placed there to knock down the Topol M, which has also just been advanced dramatically. The Topol M was a single bang warhead. Now it's a MIRVed missile, and it's had two successful test firings. So the Topol M is now MIRVed, meaning it has 10 independently targeted thermonuclear warheads in each rocket. Now the Topol has a triple speed boost phase, which makes it very hard to knock down, and these interceptor rockets that Bush wants to put in Europe are specifically designed to try to stop the Topol M in its boost phase. But that's another story. But go ahead, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, what it means is that we've now got the Russians and the Chinese and the... I've been contacted by the Japanese secret government, and it looks like they're also going to turn against the Rockefellers.
The Rockefellers have the Japanese by the short hairs, at least they have so far.
Yeah, they have so far. And the thing is, the Japanese want to keep friendly relations with the United States, right? They really do like that U.S.-Japan relationship, and they don't want to damage that. But if they can preserve that relationship and get rid of the Rockefellers, so that would be a blessing for them. They'd be very happy indeed to see that happen.
So is this suggesting some kind of... a cooperation between the Chinese secret society and the Japanese government, which wants liberation from
Absolutely.
The yoke of the Rothschilds?
Absolutely. They're cooperating.
All
and
right.
They're going to be given an ultimatum soon.
Okay.
We're just waiting for all the ducks to be in a row, but they're going to be given an ultimatum.
All right, stand by. Hold on right there, Ben. We'll come back and talk more about this. Okay. Well, quite a fortune cookie. We'll be right back in just a few minutes with Benjamin Fulford. Okay, and back with Ben Fulford. All right, Ben, you want to carry on right where we were?
Yes. They're going to be given an ultimatum. Now, you know, like I say, when these people first contact me, once I knew they were for real, the first thing I thought was, well, we play 911 movies in Chinatowns around the world. But then I thought, wait a minute. These guys are really, you know, bad people. And I thought about it. And I realized the Illuminati and all their servants are about 10,000 people. Everyone below them, if they knew what the 10,000 were doing, they would be furious and rip them out of their houses and hang them from the nearest lamppost. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Chinese have 6 million. So that's 600 to 1 odds, right? More specifically, it would be 10 professional assassins for each member of the Illuminati and their servant. Right? So, basically, it's checkmate for them. And the question is how to bring this out to the public and make this a formal thing. And now, however, killing people is something I don't like, and neither do they. You know, so the first order of business is to try to talk before things get radical. But the point is, there is a technical ability to wipe them all out within a matter of hours. They would all be assassinated. But instead, I think they're going to be offered an opportunity. I don't think. I know. They're going to be offered an opportunity to surrender.
Will you be playing a role in making such an offer?
Absolutely. I'm their spokesman. I mean, my job is to represent them in the Western world. You know, and I know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say. The point is this, is that we would start by killing David Rockefeller and then work our way down the list until they agreed to our terms.
You're speaking, I want to make this clear that Ben Fulford is speaking hypothetically here. All
hypothetically.
Right.
What I'm saying is that if they do not surrender, if they do not
or
agree
comply
to our
terms, or become acquiescent,
yes, then we have to protect ourselves from genocide. And the way to do that was with the minimum possible death. We start at the top of the eye, and we'll just work our way down until they agree.
So the idea would be 5 or 10,000 is a lot better than a billion.
But zero is better than 5 or 10,000.
And that was my next statement. Yes, I understand that. So
I want, my job is to try to make sure that not a single person dies. That's the ideal. And so the conditions are going to be offered. And I know David Rockefeller will be listening to it, so you better listen, David Rockefeller. They're going to be allowed to keep their palaces and their servants. They'll be given an amnesty, but they must appear before a truth commission. And they must promise to never, ever, them and their clan, to try again to enslave the human race. And third, they must spend the rest of their lives doing good deeds. Those are the conditions. And I think they're very good ones, and it's the best they have available. And they better hurry before the American people drag them out of their houses and hang them from the nearest lamppost, which I think is about to happen anyway.
Do those conditions apply to the Rothschilds as well?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Rothschilds can work themselves their own deal. I'm in contact with the Rothschild representative, and maybe we can come up with something else. The main point is to stop the genocide. That's the number one goal.
Now, what would you term what the Americans are doing in Iraq and Afghanistan? We have seen the slaughter of over
nuclear dust.
We're turning it into nuclear dust. We've killed already close to 1 million Iraqis since the Iraq War began over 4 years ago. The threat now to invade Iran, a country of 70 to 80 million people, is quite clearly on the front burner again. So this is genocide, and this is not being orchestrated entirely by the Rockefellers, although I do see the connection of what you're saying. Now, we want to quickly jump over to go ahead. Go ahead.
The Rockefellers are just one. I don't want to put everything in that one name. You've got to remember that you have the J.P. Morgan descendants. Basically, what people in America need to do is they need to get an old who's who, right? Look up the names of the bankers, the bankers, I believe, or seven who took over the Fed in 1913, right? Get the who's who's and look up all their descendants. And then capture all the males. And the United States would wake up It'll be like the movie The Island, where everyone suddenly wakes up and realizes they've been subjected to Freudian Pavlovian mind control. It would be a miracle. It would be freedom. That's what you have to do to save America. Those are the people you need to make as your priority targets if you want to save the United States and stop this genocide. And,
now,
of course, you get all the neocons, too, who are servants of the, you know, these people.
Well, the neocons are essentially servants of the Zionist Jewish Rothschild cartel that is pushing the Middle East agenda, as much as we can tell. Now, the oil issue, of course, crosses over to both sides. It appears that Zionism is taking on Russia now and pushing very hard in that respect, and the Rockefellers are hard at work in Iran covertly, and Iraq, of course, overtly, and Afghanistan. At least that's a simplistic overview.
They need oil to control the world. And
the Chinese need oil to continue to develop and progress, as do the Japanese.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Actually, they figured out that maybe they don't need oil. They've got these huge plants that are converting coal to oil now. And to be honest, the Japanese had the technology to make fuel from water 30 years ago.
Well, I think several people have if you simply spend an hour on the Internet and look up taking hydrogen from water and actually making it burn and so forth. There's a lot of potential out there, which the petroleum companies aren't too fond of.
Yeah. Well, actually, let me tell you a personal story.
Hold on. Yeah, let's do that in just a minute, Ben, please. We have to pause. We'll do the personal story next with Benjamin Fulford, who's just laid out some pretty interesting conditions for an alleged offer that perhaps the Illuminati can't afford to refuse. We'll see. Okay, back with you. Benjamin Fulford, live from Tokyo, is with us. Pretty stunning material. All right, Ben, you have a personal story you wanted to share. Go ahead.
Yeah, my great-grandfather was G.T. Fulford. He was one of the richest men in the world.
Say that again. What was his name?
G.T.
G.T.
George
All right.
Taylor Fulford.
Okay, G.T.
You can find him on Wikipedia. And he was one of the richest men on Earth. And he was the largest single shareholder in General Electric. And he was going to finance Nikola Tesla. But he was murdered by the Rockefellers in 1905. It was made to look like a car accident.
Your grandfather?
My great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather. He, so, really? Oh.
And the family fortune was stolen. My grandfather was only 3 years old at the time, and you know, the family fortune was taken over by the Rockefellers. You know, he didn't know how to defend his assets. But I'm telling the Rockefellers right now, they can think of me as the ghost of G.T. Fulford come back over a century and four generations to get justice.
You speak a very brave and cavalier way.
People behind me.
And I was going to say, you speak as if you are a man with great self-assurance and you have a lot of friends. So.
Absolutely. You have, 100,000 assassins backing you up. You don't have to be a chicken.
Well, you don't sound like a chicken.
No, I'm going to get these people. If no one else does, if they don't agree to my terms, they're doomed. And they know it. They have the intelligence agents. You people out there, you don't know because you don't have access. You don't know if I'm lying, if I'm a crazy guy, but they do. People in the CIA, the NSA, Mossad, they know, I'm not kidding, that this society is real and they are moving. And so they realize this is not a bluff. This is a promise. They must stop their crazy games. What these people are trying to do, I know it sounds insane, they're trying to artificially create Armageddon. They're trying to make people believe these are end times, like slaughtering people by using disease and famine. And I believe they even have, I know this will sound a bit crazy, and you'll start wondering about me, but they have some kind of microwave weapon that can heat up underground water near earthquake-prone zones. Prone zones and trigger earthquakes.
Oh, I believe that's, if that particular technology is true, it's probably one of two or three They can do it with harmonic resonance, with sonic-based weapons and devices. There are a lot of ways to get earthquake faults, apparently, to move. So, yeah.
Right. So what I'm getting the feeling is that these people were planning to artificially create the appearance of end times, you know, just like it's in the Bible, right, and fool everybody.
Well, they seem to be playing to that script.
Yeah, and you must not be fooled, because this is nothing to do with, you know, anything spiritual or otherworldly. This is right here on this earth. And the cult these people represent, I mean, they've been known by folklore over the years. You have to start with Nimrod, the Babylonian tyrant, and then Hammurabi. Hammurabi is known to the Jews as Abraham. He was a Babylonian tyrant, a slave driver. And these people have had a secret sect of slave drivers. It's almost 6,000 years old, and they have very, very sophisticated methods. They use secrecy, murder, bribery, and ridicule as their main weapons. And they've had a very good run, but, you know, it's checkmate for them, as far as I'm concerned. They're not going to get away with this. They better realize it. It's game up. They've been exposed. People know about them. They're onto their game, and it's not going to work. Because all you got to do is target the eye. Hollywood, the people in Hollywood have been trying to warn Americans for years. If you look at Tolkien's movie, you have this eye on the top of the mountain. Destroy the eye and save the world, right?
Mm.
Or The Matrix. Even Stanley Kubrick gave up his life to expose these people. So I think, you know, you got to remember this isn't to do with the Jews. I think the Jews are your best friends in fighting these people because they've been their biggest victims over the years.
Well, we're talking about Zionists here, not Jews.
Exactly. I'm talking about a specific, well, yeah, Zionists, you can call them Zionists, but I think of them at a higher level as a very secretive sect of people who are pretending that they are gods.
What happened to Stanley Kubrick?
Well, I don't have the inside story, but...
I don't mean the precise cause of death, but where was he going that got him into trouble with these people in Europe?
The movie Eyes Wide Shut showed a Masonic orgy. And they showed that there were people being killed.
Uh-huh.
And this is probably based on real events. And I haven't done the proper research, there is an old man who dies in that movie, Eyes Wide Shut. If I'm not mistaken, the man in the movie dies exactly the way Stanley Kubrick died in real life, just as he finished the movie.
It is also suggested that Kubrick was involved with creating the, at least some hoaxed Apollo moon footage and knew all about that, and his wife has intimated as much since his death.
Yeah, well, you know, what happened was in 1938, on April Fool's, they had the War of the Worlds on radio, Orson Welles,
mm-hmm.
and all sorts of people believed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, ha, this is a tool we can use. People will believe anything if it's on the media.
Well, I think the media then, and with the work of Edward L. Bernays, obviously began its ascendancy, and it has become the most powerful tool of human oppression, social engineering, programming, mind control that has ever been on the planet. It's the electronic media.
Yeah, and one of the most important instruments of mind control is association. What they do is, for example, with this Holocaust stuff, right, they show you something so horrible
mm-hmm.
that everybody is disgusted, you know, killing innocent women and children in gas chambers, turning people into soap. It's just so awful that you hate it, right? Anyone would.
Of course, the soap issue has been completely discounted, by the way.
That's not the point. The point is they fill you with a horrible story, and then they associate everything they don't want you to think about with that.
Yep.
So before I woke up to what was happening to me, somebody said there's a secret cartel of financiers who control the world's central banks, right? I would have instantly said, oh, yes, that's that anti-Semitic thing. Oh, you're a neo-Nazi. You want to kill people. Oh, my God, you're horrible. I can't talk to you. And then the conversation shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they do it. It's a kind of mind-washing, brain control through association.
The Illuminati controllers have been bleeding the world's populace for a long time. They're real good at it.
Yeah.
What is it about your message that you think their ego will back down enough to take seriously? Now, you laid the numbers out there. Is it going to take some kind of an example?
I hope not. I really do. You know, because even if you send one assassin, this guy has got a family. He's got people who love him. It's going to be a suicide mission for sure. And we'd rather not have to do that. And then his family has to be supported. It's not a nice thing to kill people. No, so it's really a last resort.
All right. Stand by, Ben, and we'll take a break. Come right back with Benjamin Fulford, again, the Asia-Pacific Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine for nearly 8 years. Take a look at his website. Click on his name at rents.com. It's a remarkable conversation. If it is true, of course, it changes the balance of power, dynamics on this planet, incredibly. Well, time will tell. We'll be right back.